cent. County road fund 2000, $4,548,661.34. County road sales tax fund 3402, $2,848,773.52. Animal welfare control fund 3404, $1,730,638.73. Criminal justice fund 3407, $1,424,928.26. If you flip them into the next page, this is our chart of general revenue, county general. As you see, we are pretty good bit above the 2020. I was told that we had a good collection in ad valorem tax. Once again, this may be a timing issue. Most of our escrows pay at this time of year, sometimes more pay than others. So everything looks good there on the revenue for county general. Flipping into page three, sales tax for May was $1,067,226.56. That's 27.44% higher than May of 19. We're currently 13.10% above year to date.
To page 13?
Yes. Look with me to the next page there, Tyler. No, I'm not, Tyler, I'm not trying to put you here. I'm talking about sales tax stuff. Right there. 13.1 above year to date. 27.44 month to month. That's attributed to two things, really. Last year we were up a little, but not a lot due to the pandemic. And this number, this 27 number, is pretty common around the other counties in the state. People are 32-33% up. Talking to other treasurers, we think it's probably some of the stimulus money and some tax return stuff that got thrown in there. Page four, you can see the projected revenue is $10.2 million. We're currently at 46% of that through 43% of the year. We're above projection. And then the final page is our chart, three-month moving average versus our one-year moving average. You can see a great incline in the 1 year. It's kind of getting close to the three-month moving average. So we're going to continue to watch that. We know that typically the three-month moving average dips below the 1 year, but as long as that 1 year is still trending up, we're not worried about it. Are there any questions?
Scott, looking at the animal welfare and control fund, when you take out the money that's appropriated for the spay and neuter, it looks like we have $1.58 million and some change that's available.
Looking on that bottom section there, the amount budgeted is $70,000. Mm-hmm. Of that, we've spent $24,000, so we're roughly, there's still another $46,000-ish that's available to be spent. Take 46 out of that $1,730,000, that's what, 1680. It's my math there, I'm just doing it off the top of my head.
So as I look at this, the amount not appropriated, is that?
The amount not appropriated is
what's available?
Well, it's kind of a little bit more complex. So if the amount not appropriated is available, yes.
Okay.
You're looking down here, 1.580.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions from the committee or the quorum court members on the video for Mr. Simpson?
One quick question. Again, the amount not appropriated, but for county general, it says 12%, and then something is cut.
Yeah, that's 12% withhold. That's if we're doing the 12% withheld.
Then there would be that much in the.
Well, we're negative 153 at 12%.
Uh-huh.
I think we've discussed this maybe a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. If we go back to the 10%, we're going to see a positive number in there. So I was asked to keep calculating at the 12%.
Refresh my memory. Why is the estimated available to appropriate and the amount not appropriated for those two, for that line item, so different?
Okay, the estimated available to appropriate is what you would see on in the revenue section. Okay, now for county general, there's some adjustments because there are amendments made, and sometimes there's more money put in that you don't see in the revenue section of your budget book. But if you take the available to appropriate there and take it, then go back over here to your amended budget, there's where your calculation for amount not appropriated is.
I understand. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Anything further for Mr. Sanderson? Mr. Sanderson, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The next item on the amended agenda are public comments. And if you have public comments about any item, any of the ordinances that are on the table for discussion tonight, you can please come up and to the microphone. Got the microphone. And please state your name and your Faulkner County address and use the live microphone. And take 3 or 4 minutes to make your comments. Okay. No public comments. Now, the next item on the...
One second, Mr. Pickett. Your agenda says you're going to discuss the purchase of the animal shelter.
What did you say? I didn't hear you.
Can you hit the mic?
I'm sorry. I believe your agenda says you were going to discuss the purchase of the animal shelter, but there was no documentation put out to the public, so there's no way for anyone here to know what the committee is going to talk about. May we have public comment after your discussion on the animal shelter?
If you have public comments after we get to the animal control facility, which is two items down.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Thank you.
So the next item is the proposed ordinance 2118. And first I need a motion to for the committee to consider ordinance 2118.
I'll make a motion to consider ordinance 2118.
Okay, I need a second.
Second.
All right, is there any comments on question on section one? Section 2. Section 3. Section 4.
I'm going to take just a moment on all these four sections and just clarify. These are just grants that the county has been awarded that are we're appropriating. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. While I said it before, I'll go ahead and ask about section 5 and see if maybe Margaret or anybody's here to give an explanation about what it's for.
I do not. I'm sorry.
Nobody?
Mr. Chairman, are you familiar with section 5 and what the $6,000, $6,543 is expected for elections, voter registration.
I'll let the clerk's office answer.
I have no notes on that for Ms. Margaret.
A little hesitant to move something out of committee. That
Mr. Chair, this is absolutely a guess. These don't show up without having a receipt from our office. So this anticipated money has already been revenued in. It would be my guess that this was from the school board elections that were conducted last month. That's a straight guess.
So it's just your guess is that it's a just money that's already come in.
It's absolutely money that's already come in. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's not questionable. What it's from. I don't have a right.
But as far
answer. But it is.
Or what it's for, you don't have an answer on that one?
Well, like I said, my guess would be reimbursement from schools for the school board elections.
Okay, I got you. All right, no further questions.
Any questions or comments about section six? Section seven. Section eight. Section nine.
Mr. Chair, I'll go ahead and ask if anybody from the Sheriff's Office would like to explain the transfers here for overtime and what's causing.
Hello. We are requesting the form for transfer money within County General to three of our departments from our part-time money. We need additional funding in our overtime for our county jail. Currently, we have a vacant position of 11 officers, so that causes an increase in our overtime that we did not anticipate, obviously. And so I do not, as long as we stay at this rate of vacancies, we will probably need to come back to the court approximately maybe September. I'm hoping it gets better. I hope we fill those positions in a quicker manner. We anticipate having two officers start tomorrow, but it just sometimes they come in and they're like, "This isn't for me," and we only have them a day. So that's $12,000 for the overtime in the jail, and then $200 for overtime in just our juvenile jail grant. We only budget $500 in overtime for that yearly, and we've used that officer a little bit more because we did have some vacancies in the juvenile department. We did just today fill our last vacancy in that department, and so hopefully we'll stay fully staffed in that, and that'll level out. But it's in my anticipation that we would need an additional $200 just to make sure we don't go over for the rest of the year. I think that one will take care of the rest of the year. And then the $3,000 from part-time to overtime in the COPS grant. COPS grant has been kind of hard for us to budget for because we have not had this department before. And we have found that our officers, being new officers, they're having to go to training with Alita, and sometimes the way they do their scheduling has caused some overtime that we didn't anticipate because we're kind of at the mercy of how they schedule them for those 12 to 13 weeks for that. And so that has changed a little bit, but we'll have a better understanding of how to budget that overtime for that department come next year, hopefully. But I think that will take care of the overtime for the rest of the year on that department. But we probably will have to look at county jail overtime, probably
and the $15,000 for the court security grant fund, is that?
It's a grant that we received. We have received this in years past, and it's from the administrative offices of the courts, Supreme Court of Arkansas, and this funding was approved to us and has been received into the treasurer's office, and it was approved for us to purchase 13 court security officers uniforms and new equipment. They were Class A uniforms, so it's a higher price tag on their whole uniform and updating their equipment, and then to buy three tasers and accessories that go along with that, and then two handheld metal detectors, which is something they utilize on a daily basis for court security.
The 11 vacancies in the jail, how long have those positions been vacant?
I'm going to look to Captain Stone to answer that question. I know it fluctuates.
It does fluctuate. We've had several that have been open since April. We've recently today lost two. So it just depends on the mood of it. But we've had some as early as the 1st of April that have been open.
Out of those 11?
Out of those 11.
Is 11 the highest it's been? Is it?
We've been steady around 11. 12 openings. It hasn't been the worst it's been, but it's been steady for the past few months.
And as far as new hires go, the applicant pool, the recruiting process, what's that like? I mean, that's a lot, and it's a lot of money, and, you know, 11 vacancies is a lot, so I just want to know a little bit more about it as to, I mean, I know it's a tough job. My brother did it for a year, and he couldn't hack it, and no offense, brother, but it's a tough job. And so I understand a little bit. I would just like a little bit of insight from the sheriff's office about what you want to do about it. You know, because overtime is more expensive than part-time, right? So.
Yes, I mean, we have some part-time positions open that we have helped, but we haven't had any applications coming in. That's our problem. We promote on Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth. We have people inside the jail recruiting for people they know. We're just not getting the applications in. Part-time,
yeah, just, if you don't mind.
Please.
One of the things is, this is a younger generation job. It's a, you know, you don't have to be 21 to work in our detention facility. I'm not saying all of them are. You don't have to be 21. You can start at 18 years old and work in our detention. The problem is, here's a problem. You go to McDonald's and make more than you can as a detention officer.
What is the starting pay for a juvenile? The 1301 hourly?
Yes.
And what average hours, is it part-time usually?
No, that's full-time.
It's full-time staff, mm-hmm. Benefits, everything?
Yes.
And you're 1301 an hour? Okay. All right, thank you all very much.
You're welcome.
Any further questions or comments about proposed ordinance 21-18?
Justice Pickett, I was able to contact Ms. Darter, and she indicated that Section 5 was for reimbursement for the 2021 annual school elections. So that's exactly what it was.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. If there are no further comments about proposed ordinance 21-18, I need a motion to move it to the full court for its consideration.
So moved.
So moved. Need a second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Good. Then proposed ordinance 21-18 is moved to the full court for its consideration. The next item on the revised agenda is a discussion about the animal control facility. Now, the discussion tonight needs to be focused on how to finance the animal control facility. And once we make a recommendation or reach some consensus on how to finance it, then we need to give it to Mr. Murphy, let him draw up a ordinance, and we'll consider it next month for the committee's consideration.
Question, if I may.
Sure.
Are we discussing just the purchase of the property and the building, or are we also looking at the renovations?
Think that the purchase comes first, followed by the expense associated with the remodeling, and at some time we have to discuss annual operating expenses. Now remember that the county is not going to take control of the facility if we buy it until January the 1st. So we have plenty of time to...
Actually, I think that's the end of January. Pardon? The end of January.
End of January.
Yeah.
So we have plenty of time to consider the financing during the preparation of the next budget cycle. But right now, we were talking about financing the purchase. So what is the... Get the discussion started.
I'll go first. The two major sources of finance that I'm looking at are the $1.3 million from the CARES Act. That's the first round of unencumbered funding. And then, of course, the $1.58 that's available in the Animal Control Fund or Welfare and Control Fund. Those are the two first obvious things that come to my mind. you know, I'll throw it out there and say, why not use the CARES Act money to purchase this property and renovate it and turn it into a fine state-of-the-art animal shelter, and then we have $1.7 million left over to run it for the first 2-3 years.
Further comments?
Mr. Chairman, on the CARES Act, there's no stipulations on how the money has to be spent.
That's correct.
It can be open-ended for a number of things in the county, not just the animal shelter, but several things that the county is looking at in the near future.
I think that's correct. So, how do we want to advise Mr. Murphy on how to draw up an ordinance on the source of the funding, or do we just want to leave it to him to see what happens?
Well, I think leaving it to the counselor is probably not the wisest decision. No offense.
And if I can, there's a third option as well, which is this court can also use the funding from our capital reserve fund that we have. So those are the three options I think that this committee can choose from. And of course, you could parcel it out and have some come from every fund, but those are the three particular funds at issue.
And that capital reserve fund, Counselor, is the sequestered money that we set aside every year, is that correct?
Right, it's sequestered in so much as this court has sequestered it.
Sure.
It is just a budgeting item that is a gentleman's agreement between that has been made between this court to sequester that money. My understanding is we've used it in the past to pay for other items, and potentially this could be something as well.
Well, if I may, Mr. Chairman, you know, this is going to, in my opinion, going to have to be a conversation that is hashed out and debated in the full court with every member present. You know, what we decide here as a committee, we can make a recommendation, but at the end of the day, it's going to take the other, you know, 7-8 of us to figure out. So I personally don't see it as really important to spend a ton of time debating this tonight, when the debate is going to change drastically. But I'm open to the debate. I just throwing that out there. So I'm personally prepared to make a motion on what I just said, just to get this on to the full court so we can be prepared to have that conversation tomorrow. But I'll leave it open for some more discussion.
So, Mr. Chair, I would just reply that I would be protective of the sequestered money. You know, we've been trying to build up that fund. We know that we have jail issues. We know that we have courthouse issues with this building that are eventually going to catch up to us, that have been on the back burner because we have jail issues. Using the CARES Act money, you know, I find that somewhat attractive. And then, you know, utilizing that for the purchase and for the remodel. And then that would leave the animal control and welfare money for operations. I did the quick math. If you know, we required $350,000 a year for operate, that would give us about 4.5 years to operate the shelter. And you know, we had heard, you know, replies that we could at the same time generate more revenue from the voluntary tax. You know, once the ball is rolling and grants and volunteer labor and those kinds of things. I mean, I agree that what may happen is not necessarily a business plan, but I do think it's an opportunity to move forward. Mr. Chair, I think we have a question.
Yes.
I just had something I would like to say in reference to the CARES Act money.
Can you get up, Mike?
Okay.
Speaking, please. I have also looked into the CARES Act money, and I understand that the county has said that the money is openly available for use. I myself had to submit documentation for our department and for payroll records for essential personnel in order to the county, for the county to be awarded this money. I worked tirelessly and for weeks on end gathered those documents and submitted them to Sheila. She already left, but to her department in order to submit that to the government to get that $1.3 million reimbursement, or almost $1.3 million reimbursement. And the information given to us with what could be sent in for covered expenses for the CARES Act was given to us to say that the CARES Act statutory law requires the payments from the CARES Coronavirus Relief Fund may only be used to cover costs that, and it says, are necessary expenditures incurred due to the public health emergency with respect to COVID-19 were not accounted for in the most recently approved budget as of March 27, 2020 for the state or government and were incurred between March 1st, 2020 and December 30th, 2020. That's the guidelines we were given in order to submit documents. So it's my concern, and I understand the county's perspective, but it's my concern why we are not putting that funding back to what we even submitted documentation for. It, the government gave it to our county in order to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic. No offense to the animal shelter, none whatsoever. We completely agree that it's needed for this county. But it is not my belief that the money should come from CARES Act. That is because of essential personnel and pandemic response to COVID-19. And it is my belief that it should be expended attached to that as well. I think that if the money is funded for the animal shelter, the only possible option I see for this county should be the capital improvement fund. That's where you all, as a quorum court, has set aside funding for building improvements. I mean, we came to the quorum court a few years back and received money to repair Unit 1 in multiple areas of Unit 1, the roof and multiple areas that we needed fixed. And it was approved by the quorum court, and we received that to repair our existing building. You're wanting to purchase and renovate another building for this county, for this business, because we are a business of some sort. And to me, that's what capital improvement is appropriate for, and not this CARES Act. It should be attached to essential personnel or medical expenses for this county. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woolley.
You're welcome.
So my question for the treasurer would be, is that money unencumbered or not?
I'd like to defer to counsel on that.
It is unrestricted money. Ms. Woolley is exactly correct. The way that we received the funds was by delineating expenses relating to COVID, whether that be direct purchases made or whether it be personnel. And so the sheriff's office, along with almost every office in county government, was part of that effort to upload and submit all the possible COVID expenses that we had in order to max out our allowable grant amount. And that $1.3 million was amount that was given to us as far as our ceiling by a joint effort between the state, the AAC, and the Municipal League. They hammered out the formula for that. And so all that to say that the sheriff's office, the county clerk's office, the judge's office, Scott's office, I think many offices submitted COVID-related expenses, and that's how we came up with the $1.3 million request. But it's unencumbered. There are no strings attached to it, which is much different than the rescue plan money that we'll be seeing here in the near future.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
To the counselor, please, would the American Rescue money be available for Ms. Woolley's area of CARES Act money that she would like to have returned?
Maybe. So almost all COVID-related expenses, meaning, for instance, I believe the jail refurbished one of their holding cells, or at least multiple holding cells, so a negative pressure unit such that would be able to deal with some of the COVID or potentially COVID intakes. things like that would also be reimbursable under the rescue plan. So almost everything associated with COVID direct expenses could be reimbursed through the rescue plan. The additional complicated subject is the pay issue that's allowable under the rescue plan. The rescue plan has a bonus, a one-time pay amount that can be given to certain employees that are considered frontline workers, and that can be paid on an hourly basis for times that those employees, any county employees, were putting their life in danger by being subject to catching COVID, whether that's a deputy that might have interaction with somebody in the public because they pulled them over, or whether it be somebody in the county clerk's office who is processing marriage license requests. So I would simply say that that's a very complicated issue. We're still waiting on guidance from AAC as well as NACO to really kind of hammer out some of the details on exactly who's going to be eligible. So that's a long answer to say that we don't know what all will be reimbursable, but we know broadly what will be reimbursable.
Follow up. So if we use money from the CARES Act or some other purpose other than what could be COVID-related, the rescue money could come back in to salvage that COVID-related expenses. But if we use the CARES Act, we don't have any recourse on returning the money back to the CARES Act.
I think I understand what you're asking. That is, if we misuse rescue plan money, we have to repay that back. Because if we don't follow the guidelines or the restrictions imposed by the federal government, then we have to reimburse the federal government. We don't have to reimburse the federal government for CARES Act money. That is unrestricted funds that's as good as gold.
So if we use the CARES Act money for something that's not reimbursable from the rescue, then we're out.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, when you say we're out...
We've used the CARES Act money. It cannot be utilized for COVID because we've already used it for COVID.
Right. The one caveat that I'd put there is there are going to be some COVID expenses that the county has that are not going to be reimbursable under the rescue plan. The rescue plan does not necessarily cover every COVID expense. So, for instance, if the county had an expense that does not fall within the strict guidelines of the rescue plan, then that can still be a COVID-related expense, but it may not be reimbursable under the rescue plan. So there are going to be some amounts, but just because we have a COVID-related expense in the county does not necessarily mean it will all be compensable under the rescue plan. Only certain finite things will be compensable under the rescue plan.
So I've got a follow-up question for the counselor so that I understand. So the CARES Act money was funds that the Quorum Court appropriated to various departments and was spent on COVID activities that then were reimbursed to the county, and those funds were then placed in general fund.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Justice Higgins, I want to make one clarification. It is not in general fund, County General 1000. It's in its own fund, County
okay.
General 1005, just to clarify.
Okay. But it is a reimbursement on general fund
it is. It is a general fund, 1005.
Okay, thank you.
Let me try to summarize the issues before the court regarding the animal control facility. First, we have to decide if and when we're going to purchase the property and how to pay for it. The second is if we purchase the property, we have remodeling expenses to incur, and we have to finance that. And then finally, if we have the facility purchased, remodeled, and up and running, then we have to finance the annual operating expenses. And those are all tied together. But there is a sequence, is that we can't worry about the operating expense until we have a facility up and running. And we cannot worry about the remodeling expense until we have a facility to remodel. So we have a classic economic problem. We have choices. And there are choices available in each of those three links. So the question now is, how do we want Mr. Murphy to draft an ordinance that this committee will consider next month on the financing of the purchase of the animal control facility? That's what's on the table.
Chairman, can I speak?
Committee members.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would agree that all three of these are interlinked, but I assure you I do worry about how we're going to pay for operations. I am worried about how we're going to pay for operations, yeah.
That's always the budget problem, is the annual operating expenses.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman.
Talk loud.
Yes, sir. I'm pretty loud, but I've got pretty loud. I've talked to a lot.
Thank you, sir. I've been talking to a lot of people. I've never been on this. I know a lot of y'all have worked on this for years. Justice Higgins has worked for a lot of years on this issue and stuff. But a lot of people I'm talking to in the animal interest community and the veterinary people, even people with the animal shelters that exist, there's a severe lack of trust in a county fulfilling its obligations on this issue. In my opinion, the people that have paid that voluntary tax since 2005, I think it is, they have donated that money to build and finance an animal shelter. That's, in my opinion, voluntarily donated money that should be used for that purpose. My worry is the perception, not saying this is anybody's intent, but my worry is the perception from talking to people that if we use other unencumbered money, Councilor Murphy, you can tell me if I'm wrong, we're not restricted to using that building then for an animal shelter. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So we could buy that building and turn it into an airplane hangar. And I'm afraid that some of these folks that are here tonight, some of these folks that have been down this road before, that's exactly what their thoughts are going to be, is that we will use that for something else. So my suggestion to the committee, if I may, is to use $400,000 of this animal shelter fund to purchase the property so that we are required to utilize that building as an animal shelter. And later, in the next intervening 7 months or whatever it is, we can have this argument about CARES Act or whatever we need to, the other money, the $4.3 million or whatever it is, that we can figure out how to renovate and how to finance it. I think that there's people here, there's passionate people, and they want to see this done. They're willing to continue to pay that tax. They're willing to embark on a campaign to get more people to pay the tax. I am going to stand here today and tell you that I have never checked that box before to pay the voluntary tax. But if we purchase this building, I will, from this point forward, check that box and pay that tax. And so my suggestion is to use that money so that these people who have spent their money, their time, their treasure, who bathe their dogs in their bathtubs, who got carried more animals in their homes than any of us have ever had, that they start to trust us as the county. And they know that we are working to resolve this issue. That's just my suggestion.
As Mr. Higgins pointed out at the beginning of the meeting, there's about 1.5 5.8 left in the animal control fund. We have $400,000+ to purchase the property. And we have about $1 million coming down the pike to remodel. And we can do all of that with out of the currently unappropriated amount in the animal control fund. But the next question is, where's the money coming from to operate it? Which is $350,000 a year. We don't know for sure, but that's a ballpark figure. Now, our budget is not going to have $300,000 to $350,000 in new money next year. So, if we take money out of the animal control fund for purchase and remodeling, there's nothing left for operating. See, we have a classic economic problem. It's choices, and it has to do with money. Question?
Isn't what he said was to use the $400,000 to buy it and then figure out how to pay for the renovation out of the $1.3 million or wherever all this unencumbered money is, and then use the rest of the animal control fund to run the facility? And we've got 7 months from the time we purchase it until we're going to have ownership of it, and then you'll still have the money left over after you take the $400,000 out of it. That's how I understood it. And not use all of our voluntary tax money to renovate it and buy it. That's the way I understood it.
That is one of the alternatives, and you verbalized it correctly. Question?
Well, yeah, I guess it's sort of a question, but you're mentioning now that this can't come before the whole quorum court until next month. Is there no way to get an ordinance put together and then suspend the rules and bring it up tomorrow? That's question one. I've got a follow-up. Is that doable?
It could. Are we in a hurry?
Well, I seem to remember the judge saying he was in a hurry.
Yeah, I think we've got time. I think we've got.
As far as I'm concerned,
I'm certainly not wanting to delay it.
It's up to y'all. I was just wondering if that was possible. Now, as far as the purchase, and I understand exactly what you're saying, Mr. Pickett. You're absolutely right. I've owned a couple of businesses in my time, and I know a lot of people who've owned businesses here. You don't buy a building to use for your business without knowing how you're going to renovate it and what you're going to pay to renovate it and where you're going to get the money. And you certainly don't buy and renovate a building and then not know if you're going to have the cash to operate it, because then you just got a pig in the poke. You don't have a building. Now, earlier on in other conversations in front of personnel, it was mentioned that the build-out, that's $1 million, give or take, was for the complete place. If the build-out was taken down to a lower level, I understand somebody would have to make a decision. But if the build-out was down to what we consider we need now to actually get the place open and running, and then as we show more activity, we'd be able to go forward with it on a proven basis. That money could come out of the CARES Act money. It wouldn't deplete the whole amount of CARES Act, which means there'd be money left for the sheriff and other people who are looking for it, which is important. But it would also then leave a majority of the $1.7 million for operating expenses, which Justice Pearson mentioned would provide, give or take, 3 years' worth of operating expenses. Sounds to me like that plan would at least not hurt everybody, get most of it done,
and the less you spend for renovation, the more is available for other functions throughout the county. And we get this thing up, and we know it's going to run because we know we've got the money to run. I think if you're going to recommend that the councilor writes an ordinance, that's the ordinance we should write. Thank you. Is there anything further? But everybody understands that the trade-offs that this committee and the full court faces. Yes, Judge.
I've listened to this debate for 15 years. The point is, in my judgment, it would not be wise to let this property go. If you get the property, then you've got something you can work with. These folks are ready to write grants. Grants are available. If you have a location, that might answer some of the questions as operating expense. It would give them an opportunity to go to the taxpayers of this county and say, look, we now have a location. Check that box. Help to operate this facility. But if you don't have the location, none of this stuff, this is all academic. If you buy the building and in 7 months there's not a way to pay for renovation, there's not a way to pay for operation, you've got 3.5 acres on the busiest north-south highway in the state of Arkansas. You can sell it. I mean, it seems to me that this location, as far as an animal shelter is concerned, is excellent because of the proximity of companions. It does a lot of work for these folks. It's fairly centrally located. It has a lot of attributes, checks a lot of boxes, but you can't find out all these other things that are out there, the grants, check the box, until you get the location. And if you don't get the location, like I said, you're chasing windmills. My recommendation would be, I know that's not the motion before the committee, but at least move forward with a recommendation that would allow the purchase of the property. And once you get the property, then you can start discussing the issues that you raise, remodeling, operational expenses. And I understand Justice Higgins' issue with operating. It's got to be done. But if you've got it, then possibly these other things will be available to address those issues. Without it, this other stuff is just going to be, you're wasting your time. I mean, there's no need to apply for a grant, you don't have a place to put it. So that would be my thought on it. I've had more dogs in my house, and I've had more dogs in my bathtub than I care to think about over the last 15 years. And as far as shepherding the county's monies, you think about over the last 15 years when there's been an animal crisis, these volunteers have stepped in to make up the slack. The sheriff's office and his limited personnel have stepped in to make up the slack. And the contribution from the forum court and from the county has been minimal. So those assets have been shepherded for a long time. Now's the time. This is an opportunity to buy a good piece of property in a good location with a lot of attributes that the county should not pass up, and at least examine, once you get the property, examine the possibilities of how you can accomplish steps 2 and 3. That's all I'm saying. And I thank you for your attention.
Thanks, Judge. Could I have a motion from the floor to instruct the county attorney to draft an ordinance to take the fund to the purchase price out of the sequestered capital improvement fund?
Mr. Chair, I would go ahead and make a motion that we purchase the facility out of the animal control fund.
Second. Out of the animal control fund?
The initial $400,000 to purchase the property.
Purchase property out of animal control fund made by Peterson.
Discussion on the motion if we can.
Is there Is that a motion?
It was motion and seconded.
And a second. Discussion.
I'm just concerned that if we deplete the animal control fund, there will be nothing left for operational expenses, and you know, it, that's why I recommend the one, so we have a big chunk of money, we can fund it. I mean, they're right there. So I'm not opposed to your idea per se, but I'm more inclined to spend the money from somewhere else so we have more money to operate it. I know that you're aware of the operational expenses, and so my question would be, why purchase the building from this fund and not the CARES Act fund?
So Justice Allison hit on a couple points that I had been thinking on anyway, but here's one reason. So from experience, if we purchase it from the Animal Control Fund, and if things don't work out and we sell the property at a profit, because it was purchased with Animal Control Funds, then all the profit would go back into the Animal Control Fund. That was one thing that we were able to acknowledge when we purchased the last piece of property, that all of the rent and all of the proceeds went back to the Animal Control Fund. And I know we took some heat for that, but that situation was beneficial financially to the fund. And so in this case, if we purchase it from county assets, county funds, and then we sell everything, all of that would go to the county.
What if we purchased just a majority of the funds came from Animal Welfare Control and wrote the ordinance to state that this is for this fund, and if it gets sold, it goes back, you know, or a percentage at least, just to try to split the difference and leave more money in that Animal Welfare and Control Fund for operational expenses?
So we could do that, but also think about this, that we could probably discuss in full court, is if we purchased the facility with the Animal Control Funds, the build-out would be up for debate where we pay for that. And see, we might not do the build-out out of the Animal Control Fund, and that would leave the balance of that for operations. Now, I mentioned earlier that if we purchased the entire building from some other one, that would leave about 4.5 years of operation, $350,000 a year. But so if we purchased the building, it would be a little bit less than that, but it would still be, I'd have to do the math, it'd still be a couple of years that we could operate, have operational funds with no additional support out of the Animal Control Fund. Actually, a little bit more than that, because my calculations did not take into consideration any additional revenues for preceding years from the voluntary.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, so I didn't include that also. Actually, that would even add another year.
Probably another year.
Top of that.
Yeah.
So I think those would be the things that we could debate in full court. Mm-hmm.
Do we have an estimate? I mean, I know there was a number given on the potential cost of renovations. Is that, how solid is that number? Are we?
So we have a preliminary estimate from Rick Sal. Mm-hmm. Also, I received some information as late as today over a group that actually helps startups with animal shelter. I've looked at some numbers. I forwarded that information to the attorney to let him look at it as well. Again, this information is brand new, but there are organizations who help startups. So in the time that we have, in the months that we have, we're not locked in specifically to any one person or entity. I'm not despairing Mr. Sal at all. He does a good job. I've worked with him in other projects, but we have options.
Well, I personally am inclined to support the motion. I wouldn't be opposed to some type of amendment that starts to cut in some of that CARES Act money to purchase this building, if it's possible, to where your concerns about if the building is sold, making sure it goes back to the Animal Welfare and Control Fund, just to make sure that it's clear that the court's intention is to use some of that or all of that CARES Act money for this animal shelter project. You know, stating that on the outset up front, I just feel like we'll give this whole thing a better chance of long-term success, you know, than if we wait a month and you know, another idea comes along to use the CARES Act money for something else. And I don't know, it's just a concern, but I'm inclined to support the motion as stated.
Well, I think the good thing is the CARES Act money won't be used for something else unless the Quorum Court says it's okay to do so.
Well, you give it time, and then it could, but I agree.
Is there further discussion about the motion on the table? All in favor of the motion please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Now, the last item on the agenda today is a discussion of the detention center medical costs. And we have some data that's been submitted to us, three different ordinances on how to finance it, and where's the sheriff?
Do we have copies of these? I have not seen them. I may have it. I've not seen it, though.
Mr. Chairman and court, you may go ahead and start.
Well, we have, excuse me, Sheriff, we have two copies and four people. Ms. Woolley, do you have additional copies?
I have one additional copy. I can get you additional
here.
These
copies,
are
out of
but
I didn't. I think I had a sign off.
I have one more copy.
Mr. Chair, I do have
those are all the same.
Are they the same?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Welcome to have my copy.
No, they are.
Sheriff, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 5 years ago, when I was when I took office, you know, one of the very first things that was brought that came to my attention was our medical inside of our jail. It was a concern, and it is one of the things that keeps you up at night worrying about. We've had several incidents that's happened over the years that has absolutely been devastating. I actually have one of our attorneys here that represents us and has represented numerous lawsuits that we've been in. And I bring that up to say the way we've operated, I've known from the very first time that I went to a sheriff's association and got an understanding of how a lot of our larger jails, class 7 counties, our class 6 counties, and even some of our class 5 counties, are not using independent doctors and staff. They're using what we call a third-party medical. Now, here's the reason I bring that up. Last Thursday or Friday, we actually got a 30-day notice of our jail doctor who had been with us, Dr. Stewart, and his resignation. He turned in a 30-day notice that will come in effect July the 8th. And I asked Dr. Stewart, I said, where do you have any recommendations of where I can go to find a private practice doctor? Because they're the only ones that can do what he was doing to come in. He eventually come up with a doctor that I could try to call, who I have. And he has yet to return my phone call. I'm assuming because I told him what it was for. Dr. Stewart said, I don't know any other doctor that's going to do this. That was his words. And so, from the very first Sheriff's Association I went to, I saw the importance of having a third-party medical, and I'm going to explain to you what a third-party medical is here in just a minute. But first, what I would like to do
our issue is we do not have a jail doctor after July the 8th of this year. We have to have a jail doctor. Our nurses can't operate or disperse medication without a jail doctor on board. We have LPNs who actually are inside our jail. We only have two of them. And all this time, we've operated with one jail doctor and two LPNs. And it has been at moments where we have one of our LPNs gone. We do have some part-times that we call in. But we've been put into several binds over the years. And one of my biggest fears is the jeopardy or the legal aspect that we're placing this county, not only Faulkner County Sheriff's Department, not only my staff and me, but this county and this court. I want and AEC. So I want to present to you guys a third-party medical opportunity. I've been looking at it for 5 years. I've always wanted to bring this up and try to be able to get this. I was going, well, I don't know that we can afford this. I don't know that this county can do this. But now that we don't have a doctor after July the 8th, I want to present to this court, and hopefully y'all see what I see and understand what I understand after hearing from Jason Owens, one of our representatives on our attorneys. I also have from Pope County, who is a class five county. They utilize third party. And their sheriff and I have communicated, and he told me there is no other way. You always need to go to third party medical if your county ever gets in a position to be able to support that and go that direction. And then I also have the CEO of a third party company that is called Turnkey. And that CEO is Flint Juno. And so I'm going to start out, if you don't mind, with Jason Owens to give a little bit of history on why a third-party medical is good. And then eventually we'll work down the line and then get to Angie, who's got some stats, and we can give you all the information and questions that you may have of us. We'll be able to answer them at that point. Jason.
Yeah. Members, thank you all for having us here today. We're in a situation, obviously, with Dr. Stewart resigning. He's been providing a really valuable service at a cut rate for a long time. And I think that, well, I won't guess as to his reasons for resignation. They're in good faith, I can assure you. So let me kind of explain the lay of the land here a little bit from the legal side. I get, you know, I tell people I represent county jails for a living. A lot of them say it seems like prisoners have more rights than I do. And my response to that is always the same. Well, they do. They absolutely do. Prisoners certainly have the right to be fed and clothed and kept in a reasonable atmosphere and so on and so forth. Prompt appearances in court and all those things. But one of the biggest rights they have that you and I don't is the absolute constitutional right to medical care, okay? And so the cases have examined that over and over again here in Arkansas and across the country as to what the standard is for that. And ultimately, the U.S. Supreme Court has said that those operating in county jail, and that includes the quorum court, by the way, our Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, our federal appeals court, has essentially said that lack of funding is not an excuse, that there's a constitutional duty here to provide medical care to the detainees in our county jail. And county jails, as opposed to prisons, are populated by pretrial detainees. That's an important distinction here, as opposed to state prisons. State prisons are all third-party medical, and I'll speak about what that is. But state prisons are all third-party medical. I think county jails, at this point, are about a third third-party medical, a quarter to a third have third-party medical contractors. But the standard, according to the U.S. Supreme Court, is that so if we get sued for denial of medical care by a prisoner, and this isn't an abstraction, I've got 30 files over there in my office right now across the state where people are being sued for just that. The standard is whether the county and its officers and officials, from the floor officer on the jail up to the court and the county judge, the sheriff, of course, gets sued in almost every case, whether he had anything to do with it or not. The question is whether the county was deliberately indifferent, okay? And so that breaks down into two pieces, essentially. Did we actually know that this person had a medical need? And then were we indifferent? Did we disregard or ignore the need? Okay. And so there's a couple of levels here. Of course, we can all kind of appreciate the discreet, singular inmate who comes in and says, I'm a diabetic, I need my insulin right away. And boy, that's a big problem. If you can't get to that quickly, that can turn bad on you really quickly. But there's also this other level of sort of a system-wide risk, okay? And that's what I guess we're dealing with today and talking about today. We know that jail populations tend to have more medical problems than non-jail populations. There's a whole bunch of reasons for that, and I won't bore you with. Most of them are obvious. Higher suicide rates exist in jail, which is, of course, mostly owing to mental health problems. And so there's this whole thing where we know that folks have these medical problems at usually greater intensity and greater frequency than the normal population. And so, as a jail, the cases have said, you've got to figure out what's going on with them when they walk in the door. And so there are sessions that go on, that sort of thing. Once you figure out what's going on with them, or if something develops while they're there, you're bound to take care of it. And so we stand here at this point in time with Faulkner County where we're about to lose our jail physician. And so we talked about choices before. We've got some choices. And different jails across the state, I've seen every model tried. Different jails across the state try different things. Fewer jails now are doing what Faulkner County has been doing, which is to have a local doctor donate or mostly donate his time, certainly discount his time, provide that service. And in those cases, usually the counties do what Faulkner County has done, where they would hire nurses. Of course, there are levels of nursing, right? LPNs, RNs, even nurse practitioners on the top end. Those are substantive distinctions in jails because, for instance, LPNs essentially aren't allowed by their licenses to even assess the inmate. So they've got to go to them, and essentially they're a relay service. So they've got to say, what's going on with you? Okay, I'll call the doctor and tell her. Okay, they can't engage in the kind of independent assessment that even a registered nurse would be able to do. My wife's a registered nurse. I've got a little bit of insight on this. But the problem here is we're going to continue to have inmates with health problems. I suspect a large portion of the inmates over there right now have health problems that we're medicating them for daily, that require intervention, probably daily, but certainly very frequently. And so you're left with this Hobson's choice of sorts where what do we do with them if we don't have a doctor? Well, the answer there is real easy. They've got to do something for them in the jail. And I'm going to continue to advise them you've got to do something for them. And so when it bubbles up to the level of an LPN can't take care of them, which is pretty low, okay, that's going to be almost anything. They're going to have to run them to the ER. ER bills are not cheap. Those bills will mount up in a hurry and be very expensive. The other options would be to try to find another local doctor who can come in and serve in the similar or same role as Dr. Stewart. Again, very difficult. We're underserved on physicians in Conway as it is. And it takes a special doctor, honestly, to want to do that. there's just not a lot. There's no money to be made in it. We all want to make money. We all, I mean, that's how we survive, right? And then the third is this third-party medical contractor. So this is, and Flint Juneau can tell you a lot more about it than I in terms of the rubber meeting the road, but these are full-service operations that come in, provide doctor coverage, registered nurse coverage, medication monitoring, which is a really big deal. But I think from the liability perspective, and that's what I can speak to mostly, I am a liability lawyer after all, it's that sort of initial intake and the ability to monitor for the problems when they arise. So when somebody's appendix bursts or they're going into ketoacidosis because their diabetes, their blood sugar's gotten out of control, you've got to have coverage to be able to determine that that's going on and get them somewhere. So what does that mean, bottom line? Okay, what if we don't do any of that? Well, you're going to get sued. We're already getting sued. Agreed. Okay, we are. People ask me, the other question people ask me all the time is, can they really sue me for that? I get that question from sheriffs and county officials all over the state, and the answer is yes. Anybody can sue anybody for anything in America. The question is, can they win? And the answer would be, if you don't have something in place to cover these things, absolutely they can win, and they'll bankrupt you. Those lawsuits will bankrupt you. So, look, excess judgment is not a huge risk. It's just not. If you've got systems in place, excess judgment is not a huge risk. We've had, in 30-plus years at the AAC, we've had three or four excess judgments or settlements. Okay, and that's judgments in excess of the coverage that you pay for to be a member of the Association of Arkansas County's Risk Management Fund. Y'all elected $500,000 in coverage. I think that's wise. The Risk Management Fund has paid that amount. In a prior case, and certainly pays for settlements from time to time where it's indicated. Sometimes, frankly, to forestall the future expense of defending the case, and sometimes that happens. It's easier to pay $1,000 than continue defending some of these cases. But most of them are based on where we settle. They're based on risk and concern that we're not going to win the case. Bottom line is there's a constitutional duty here. We know that there's a risk of health care problems in jail, and so something has to be set up to provide this medical care to these detainees. I don't think it's feasible to just take everybody to the ER. Not only because even if things rock along just as they are, you run out of money like that. But because if detainees smell that everybody's getting taken to the ER when they have a health problem, you're going to have a lot of malingering. The rates are going to go up. The folks that need to go are going to go up. And if you go down the road of, well, we'll cut some of these lesser offenders out, well, then all lesser offenders are going to have a health problem because they know that's the road out of the jail. The local physician who volunteers or discounts his time was the model, but I'm telling you, there's just not a lot of willingness out there to do that at this point. And a lot of that has to do with the risk on the physician. The malpractice carriers won't cover them for this kind of work because of the litigiousness of the patients. Or if they cover them, the price is going to be so high that they're going to price you out of hiring. That's why I think third-party medical, and I'll say turnkey is the best in the business in Arkansas right now. I've been involved in cases, lawsuits where, look, turnkey will get sued too. If we decide they're the ones to go with and we hire them here, they'll get sued. No two ways about it. They will. They get sued everywhere they are. Just like any third-party medical contractor, the ones that do it for the state prisons get sued all the time. That's just part of providing any service to prisoners. That's what happens. But it provides exceptional liability protection for the county. in those cases, because those denial of medical care claims, instead of being directed to the county, are redirected to the third-party medical. So that's another piece you're paying for here, would be the liability protection. But it becomes a choice of, we've got to do something, and what's the best option? They're all expensive. I'll just prepare you for that. They're all expensive, but they're all less expensive than ignoring the duty and moving forward without systems in place. You've got to have a system in place. Otherwise, the county will get sued, and all the officials will get sued. Lack of funding is not an acceptable excuse for the federal courts. It's just not. And so we've got to find a solution. You're not going to like the numbers, no matter what we talk about. You're not going to get the deal you had, I don't think. But we've got to do it, and we're going to save money no matter what we spend on this versus proceeding forward without any medical care for these detainees. The last point I would make is, whether or not there was a constitutional duty, I think there is a moral prerogative here to provide care for these detainees. These are members of our community that, as pretrial detainees, are presumed innocent. The Constitution says all those folks are innocent. Now, we've got some convicted folks over there, too, that have already had their day, and they're waiting on a bed in the ADC. Most of those folks are pretrial detainees, members of this community that are presumed innocent. So I think there's a moral duty there, too. But that's the broad strokes. I'm happy to answer any questions y'all have. I think I do have some unique insights here, in the sense that I see all 75 counties. I've got cases from 40-plus counties on my desk right now. And so I kind of see the broad view maybe a little differently than somebody that doesn't have that experience. But I'm happy to answer any questions you've got and speak to the relative pros and cons, because there are pros and cons with any solution like this. But there's got to be a solution. That's the bottom line from where I stand. All right. With that, I guess I'll let Rowdy or Flint speak.
I got one question.
Yeah.
I was just waiting for the
jury. Sure.
You're a liability lawyer, so I'll probably just stick to asking you about that for
sure.
Now.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit more about you mentioned the advantages of sharing some liability if we were to go with the turnkey option.
Yeah.
Can you just tell me more about that? What advantages are there? In your experience, what have you seen? Have you seen them get sued over the county, or
yes,
is it usually both? Or?
Yeah, so turnkey is a corporation, S-Corp, C-Corp, something like that, LLC, some corporate structure, and they hire their own people, and we contract with them. And so their doctor will get sued by the inmate who doesn't like the way he was treated. Now, I'll tell you, when they come in, the cases move from, because I've seen it in Washington County or Benton County or Sebastian County or White County, all these counties that have this in place, they move from these sort of real serious things, you know, I nearly died when my appendix ruptured, to my medicine was an hour late. You know, the sort of intensity of the lawsuits goes down. But people getting sued end up being the turnkey folks. I'm not telling Flint anything he doesn't know, but it ends up being those folks, and they get sued. We're not there is no vicarious liability. One of the things that's unique to this sort of litigation, well, a couple things. One is counties are immune from tort liability, although the Supreme Court has limited that to date. We're arguing against that currently, so I won't say it's always going to be the case. But they've limited that to immunity from negligence liability to date. In other words, if I rear-end you in your vehicle, that's probably going to be found to be negligence in the court because I didn't act like a reasonable person would act. County actors are immune from that kind of liability in the state of Arkansas by statute. And so county actors get sued, instead of for negligence, they get sued for constitutional violations. The The import of that is that constitutional violations require intentional misconduct of some kind. There has to be this showing, like medical care, deliberate indifference. Not just indifference, not just you ignored it, but that you knew that this was going on and you ignored it. But again, there's also that top-level risk of you knew that detainees are going to have medical problems at a certain percentage, and you better have something in place to take care of that. But no, the reason they get sued is twofold. One is there's a lower standard. They can get sued for malpractice because they're a private corporation. But they also get sued because they're the ones the detainees are interacting with. They remember the doctor's name and the nurse's name. And so when they're suing or talking to their lawyer about suing, that's the names they're remembering. And the fact of the matter is, that's the ones that are involved in the provision of care. The jail officers, at that point, their duty is to report to the medical staff and tell them, hey, I just saw this detainee fall out or collapse or whatever. Or he just told me that this doesn't look like it to me, but y'all better go check him out, okay? That's the sort of things that happen. And so the only time in that scenario where the jail staff gets in trouble is if they don't faithfully report, right? Where they see somebody collapse and just keep going on with what they're doing, which we would hope they wouldn't do, of course. Yeah.
A couple follow-up questions.
Sure.
Would the lawsuits against the corporation, if they occur more, would those affect our premiums potentially? I know you don't work for them, so
no, because the Association of Canada's Risk Management Fund is not insurance. It's not insurance, so it's not actuarially based. If you buy insurance from Farm Bureau or State Farm or whoever, they're going to look at you and go, well, this is a married male of 26 years old who, you know, all these risk factors.
Well, our rates, what we pay, it's per capita. It's not like that. Okay, that answers my question.
That keeps it from being insurance, which preserves your negligence immunity.
Well, and then you also mentioned, you know, that I guess let me just ask you directly, in your opinion, you know, would our liability as a county go down if we went with a third party?
Yes.
Would you recommend a lower coverage of our liability insurance?
Potentially. Coverage limits, I think there are three coverage limits per incident with the risk management fund, $350, $500, and $750. There may be more options because there's an aggregate coverage as well. So it's $350 per incident, $350 aggregate, and in some coverage you can get a higher aggregate where you can pay for one incident and then still have some money left over to pay for other lawsuits. It might be an option. I think it's worth looking at. And, you know, that ends up being running the numbers to see if maybe some of that premium could go to that. Don't tell the AAC I told you that. But
it's run through them if I wanted to look.
That's right, certainly. And they quote you every year on that.
Right.
Where you can investigate that.
Thank you.
The other piece is this is a full service operation. In other words, what's been happening is you pay Dr. Stewart, you pay nurses, and in part, I think the guards have been involved to date in things, and y'all can correct me if I'm wrong here, but have been involved in like passing medication and things like that. And so, you know, a portion of their salaries even have been devoted to functions that would be served by a third-party medical contractor. So you're replacing this whole thing. The other piece is ER visits, which are happening now. If Dr. Stewart's out of pocket or on call or whatever, he's going to send him to the ER for an emergency. And those happen. I can't tell you the rates. Aaron or Angie can tell you that. But that's another piece that doesn't necessarily go away. There will still be instances where somebody needs to go to the emergency room, just like anywhere. But it would diminish. Certainly experience dictates that would diminish. So it's sort of this whole bundle of sticks here that you get into. The other unique thing about the law in this area is there is statutory vicarious liability immunity in Arkansas, and also there's no vicarious liability for constitutional violations. So the county's not going to be vicariously liable if somebody from Turnkey messes up. okay? If their doctor engages in malpractice, okay? Everybody makes mistakes. Malpractice occurs at a certain level across the country with any doctor. But if that happens, there's no vicarious liability like there would be if you ran the Coke distributorship and your driver ran somebody down the crosswalk. Coke, you would be liable for that as the employer. That's not the case with counties, either under state or federal law. So that's a little bit of a different thing there, too, which diminishes liability even further. You still get sued. My experience is your liability exposure is less, and in some cases, depending on the population, depends on a lot of things, demographics and jail populations, it can be dramatically less. These tend to be the kind of lawsuits that produce big verdicts. I mean, when you think about what produces a big verdict out of a jail, it's when somebody dies. And when they die, they're going to sue one of two or three theories. One would be a failure to protect them from somebody that's beaten to death. The other would be probably in some kind of medical care or you knew my son was going to commit suicide or something. Those are all sort of wrapped up in the medical care piece. Another is the intake where, in some models, you've got a booking officer doing a medical intake on somebody, doing a medical questionnaire, and they're trying to observe, is this person just drunk? Is this person just high? Or is this person alcohol poisoned or drug poison to the point where they've overdosed and we better get into the emergency room or get them some Narcan immediately. Those kind of decision-making things, getting them on insulin immediately, that I think third-party medical is really good at, that jails sometimes aren't as good at because they're lay people, right? Whereas in a third-party system, you'd have medical personnel handling those duties. So, I'm real high on third-party medical. It is expensive, but what I would say is all the options along this continuum are expensive. And you kind of got to pick which one you think provides the most bang for the buck. I think the options are diminishing in this space because of how good third-party medical has proven to be. We settled a case in East Arkansas, one of our counties, where somebody, a truck driver coming through town, didn't get his insulin, and within 2 days he was dead. Ketoacidosis and all of this. And the county ended up paying excess judgment over and above their coverage of almost $1 million. And part of the settlement was that they agreed to hire a third-party medical moving forward. That's the reason they only paid around $1 million. And so, we see even smaller counties moving to third-party medical to try to avoid not only the liability exposure, but to provide the care that these detainees need. So,
one more.
Yeah.
You're real high on these folks. You say they produce liability, yet you make your bread on the counties.
I know.
On liability. So I just want to know why
I get asked that question sometimes. I'm not concerned about my job security. As long as there are prisoners, there will be lawsuits. It doesn't matter how well you do it. That's just the honest truth. It doesn't matter how well you do it. There will be lawsuits. And so I'm not concerned about that. And honestly, if there weren't, I'd find other things to do. I've got marketable skills. But there's no question that there will continue to be litigation. I don't doubt that at all. I just think the liability exposure reduces, which makes the litigation a lot less risky for the county. All right, that's all. I'm going to pass the mic off to Glenn.
Yeah. Thanks, Jason. My name is Flint Juneau. I'm the CEO of Turnkey Health, and we've been working with different counties in Arkansas for several years. We're working right now with 17 counties in the jails throughout Arkansas. And the sheriff and Jason had mentioned More and more counties are going to third-party operations like us, and the primary reason, you heard him say liability, lawsuits, over and over again, that's just a fact of the matter. If we get in our car today and we drive from here to Little Rock, I can almost guarantee if you counted them, you'd probably see about 100 billboards of lawyers wanting you to call to represent you for one thing or another. And usually it's injury attorneys or wrongful, whether it's death or those type of lawsuits. So what ended up happening in correctional facilities about 15 years ago when the litigation started coming up, Jason mentioned that the local doctor used to be the system in jails. As these lawsuits started coming forth and county jails started seeing them more and more, those lawsuits started pushing private doctors out of the industry. Today, I would only be able to guess, but I would venture to guess the reason your current doctor, one of the primary reasons he might be leaving is because most malpractice insurance companies have a waiver to where they will not do correctional settings anymore. That's the level of litigation that is seen. So a private doctor has to weigh that risk of whether he's going to provide the service and risk his private practice or not. So there is a whole nother industry that we are involved in, which is a correctional health insurance that has spun up over the years because of this. Today, you cannot find a policy to cover anyone in that for less than $1 million just to cover it, whether you got one jail, whether you got 1,000 jails. So it's become very expensive and cost prohibitive for counties to continue to operate as they have in the past. So that's where Turnkey spun up. We're out of Oklahoma City. We work with around 70 county jails in our region through Oklahoma, Arkansas, Kansas, Missouri, Texas, Colorado. We have a regional approach, and that is strategic because we can have the individuals work in a region and have full-time people doing jobs at multiple facilities as opposed to having part-time doctors or part-time nurses or part-time staff coming in. So, for instance, in the state of Arkansas alone, I think we have 5 full-time practitioners and probably over 10 full-time mental health people that serve our facilities. And that gives us the ability to address the needs at different facilities without having a county pay for full-time employees in those professions. In addition, we have as Jason mentioned, there's different levels. There's LPNs, there's RNs, there's practitioners. Total in our region, we have over 500 of those employees. So we have people available to come to the site. Now, when we start a new project like we would here in Faulkner County, what we would do is meet with the existing staff if they're interested in staying on and it's something that would work out. We, of course, would want to add them to our team. Beyond that, we would recruit local people in this area to work at the jail in addition to whoever we have on staff. One of the things we propose is definitely enhancing your services. As mentioned, right now you have, I believe, correction officers, detention officers passing medications, which is, as a county, as you sit here today, that is your number one risk for lawsuits in the entire county, is having a detention officer pass a medication to the inmate. Law enforcement goes into it for a reason, not to become nurses, not to become doctors, but they want to provide law enforcement. That's where we come in. Detention officer necessarily is not going to know the difference between a Prozac and a Prilosec. So if he sees a P word on the paper and a P word in a bottle, all he knows is he's got to give a pill that night to that inmate. So Our program will enhance the services to 7-day-a-week coverage by nurses. Our nurses will administer those medications so the detention staff can focus on what they were hired for, which is to provide detention. We have found actually the detention turnover rates actually do improve. You mentioned you had 11 officers down right now. So nobody wants to go to the jail and be a nurse if they're hired to be a detention officer. And they don't want to hold that liability. Inmates say all day long, I'm going to sue you. I'm going to sue you. I'm going to sue you. Eventually, that's going to wear on some of your good staff, and they'll look for employment elsewhere. So if you were to probably interview the staff that are doing those functions at the jail right now, just a blank interview, their probably number one complaint is going to be, I have to do medical stuff that I don't think I'm qualified to do. And they're right. There's a huge risk, huge liability with that. In addition to the nursing, I don't know what your personal statistics are, but over half the inmates are on medications nationally. So at least half of your population have a serious medical or mental health issue. Mental health crisis is on the rise in the United States, which ends up with inmates being in jails because, or mental health patients being in jails because there's nowhere else to deal with those type of individuals. And I want you to think, if you have somebody with a serious mental health issue going to jail without having mental health people in that jail to treat that person, the odds of them succeeding and correcting themselves, such as the word correctional facility, is very, very low. So our proposal includes psychiatric time each week. It includes mental health professionals that will come into the facility and work with those individuals. That is the standard of care in our society, and most importantly in correctional facility today, to have that level of service. I'm more than happy to answer any questions. I know the sheriff had a couple other people.
If I could add just one thing to that also, the doctors that you guys utilize, this is all they do. So yes, they're dealing with nothing but inmates. Instead of taking a doctor that a private practice person and bring them in, these experienced doctors that come in from wherever they come from, they are very in tune with how inmates act, respond, how they try to get over, you know, they're not really sick. And so they are very aware of all that, where sometimes you're more, other practitioners may not be quite so streetwise.
Yeah, that's a great point, Sheriff, because generally a community practitioner is going to practice in a jail in a way where he's going to think, what do I need to do to keep this individual happy and not get sued?
Yeah.
Basically, is his mindset. This is what our providers do. As I mentioned, we have some, like in Pulaski County, we have two full-time practitioners that work in there. And then we have three or four that float throughout the state and work at all the other jails. So day in and day out, they are working. This is their patient. This is their clientele that they work with. And they are trained in a way to provide appropriate health care to these individuals without being generally manipulated or taken advantage of.
So, y'all have any questions at this stage?
Sorry, a lot to take in.
Sure.
It's a big decision, you know. I just would be curious, from your perspective, how many full-time and part-time individuals and what their positions would be that would service the Fulton County Jail?
Sure, absolutely. So what we propose to the sheriff is, I think right now you have two LVN or LPNs currently, and they only work Monday through Friday. So on the weekend, you have no coverage. We're expanding that to 7 days a week, 12 hours a day nursing coverage at each facility, 7 days a week, plus an additional administrative nurse who will, you know, oversee the program generally Monday through Friday.
And she's an RN.
She is, yes. And that will, it's going to be, it's more than double what you guys utilize now.
Now we have two LPNs, Monday through Friday, 40 hours a week. Is that right?
That's right.
And one RN currently?
We do not have an RN.
No RN, just the two and then the doc.
Years ago, before my tenure at some point, they had an RN, but they reduced that back down to two LPNs.
Right.
And we do have two part-time that if one is off, they can call the part-time LPN. Is that not my?
No.
I'm sorry.
We only have two LPNs on staff plus the doctor that comes once a week. We have two part-time girls who come in and help do the paperwork, but only two nurses.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Okay.
Misunderstood.
And so you keep the two LPNs the same or new ones, whatever. You keep those positions, expand the hours. Is that right?
So right now it's 8 hours a day, Monday through Friday.
Mm-hmm.
We go to 12 hours a day, 7 days a week at each facility. And then an RN supervisor.
So two at each facility,
yes.
Is that right? And currently we just have two for both. Is that right? Yes?
Yes, we have two for both.
Okay, so there'll be two at unit one, two at unit two, and there would be coverage by at least one of them 7 days a week.
Seven days a week, right? Yep.
Plus an RN that would be working how often?
40 hours a week.
40 hours a week.
Full-time administrator.
Okay.
And the other thing I didn't mention is we will implement an electronic health record system, which you guys know, I mean, that's, I used to say that's the future. It's actually the past at this point. It's an expectation. Unfortunately, the county has never had the funds to implement that. So I'm sure Jason would agree that's another huge liability for missing paperwork in a lawsuit, et cetera, et cetera. We implement an electronic health record system that not only tracks medications, but tracks our scheduling, tracks our documentation, referrals, all that stuff, permanent history for you guys. So it definitely helps with litigation risk.
And then as far as having the doctor available, where are they? And, you know, you said two full-time doctors in Pulaski County, but we're not getting one. Is that right?
Well, Pulaski County, we can, but not at the program that
so what does this get us?
Yeah. We have a provider coming in and covering one clinic a week in each facility, and then a psychiatrist covering one clinic a week in each facility. Which I don't think you have any psychiatry now, do you?
No.
So the same psychiatrist, the same doctor will just make two visits, or?
Yeah. At each facility.
Okay.
It'd be the same provider
mm-hmm.
covering the facilities.
Okay.
So it would be one of our full-time providers mm-hmm. that, you know, it might be one that covers our facility in Hot Springs or Polk County.
And then, you know, they're scheduled to come in to keep a schedule, I'm assuming. And so what happens when there's something important that comes up and, you know, whereas maybe now we call the doc and he comes in, but it doesn't happen that way? He only comes in once a week,
the
too?
The doctor only comes in on Thursdays and sees both units
okay.
on Thursdays. But he is on call
yeah.
for the nurses, but he only comes in once a week.
And I would say it's actually the opposite of that. Because if that doctor gets busy in his clinic, he's probably going to reschedule it. Or he's going to cancel the clinic for that week because he has a private practice. With us, we will have Tuesday at 2 o'clock, our doctor will be here. And they can schedule their daily routines, weekly routines. We can schedule around court movement, all that stuff, so that their daily operation is more consistent.
And they're on call for the nurses?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Okay. And then So they, but they would be physically present for those clinics. It's not telemedicine or.
We do telepsychiatry, which is standard nationally right now, but the physical provider would be coming here on site and seeing the inmates. There might be a week sporadically, you know, where they do a telehealth, but the primary clinic would be on site.
Okay. I've not seen this ordinance, these numbers until just now, so I just will ask you, since you probably were the one who gave the quote. It's $384,999.96. Is that for a 1 year deal? What is this?
I think, Justice Pearson, as I've looked at that, that is the difference prorated for what is already budgeted utilizing the doctor.
Current doctors.
Yeah,
payments.
That's what it looks like to me.
If I may, since I drafted the ordinance, and I'm sorry you did not, I should have made
it. That's okay. The sheriff called me. I should have noticed that it didn't show up.
It's okay. Because of medical bills still having to be paid that I have not received yet, currently our medical costs, majority of it is budgeted out of county general, out of the county jail department. So fund 1000, department 0418. There's a line item that the jail doctor is specifically paid out of, which is contract labor. It's 1004. And then our medicine is paid out of that same department, 2004. And then medical claims are paid out of that same department, which is 3006. We have one LPN that is paid out of that fund, and then one LPN that's paid out of criminal justice. Mm-hmm. And at this time, because of all of this still being in play and having to figure out the contract and employees and all of that situation, I did elect to not reappropriate those funds that are not exhausted yet. I just asked for the total amount for the contract for 6 months. So that is a prorated amount for 6 months payment of this contract.
And the sheriff's department just keeps the money that's already been appropriated for those other positions at a county general?
At this time, we are asking that funding stay there until we can make sure that all of our medical costs is paid for that occurred under the previous, or under Dr. Stewart, under his advisement. And then also, as Mr. Owens had mentioned previous, there will still be some medical claims that we would have to possibly pay if it's an outsourced provider that we have to seek. And because we are constitutionally obligated to provide care, if the provider will not provide the care without payment, we have to pay those bills. And so I would still need some medical costs or medical expense budgeted for. And so that'll be easier for me to view that after a month or so of having the new company come in.
But as far as the doctor's salary?
He is going to give us a prorated bill for July 1st through July 8th because he has been paid for June already. And so once we get that bill, I'll be able to tell you exactly what's left. But I would anticipate it being around $20,000 that would be left in his contract labor line.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
So I guess I just, your company is able to offer these services at this level in this package, and because you're able to service so many places, is why it's a workable business model. I'm not trying to get into that. I'm just trying to understand how your business is able to provide this level of service when, you know, doctors can't get the medical liability insurance to offer this. You know, is what
sure.
we've
yeah.
heard. You know,
so for instance. To not bore you with a bunch of details, but we have an insurance policy for our company that covers all of our providers, kind of like a hospital would. Mm-hmm. They don't have every single employee covered. They have a policy that would cover everyone who works for them. So that allows us to save money and henceforth pass on, you know, savings to our clients from doctors who would have to tag that on to their bill.
Right.
We get discount medications. We get discount the EMR. To put an EMR in the jail would probably cost you guys over $100,000 initially just to get it up and going. Mm-hmm. It's, but we have a company contract with the provider for that. Mm-hmm. That allows us to go in and do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Rowdy Sweet. I'm the captain and jail administrator at the Polk County Sheriff's Office. I'm also the mayor of the city of Atkins. Just so you know who you're talking to. I'm not a stranger. My name's y'all, I guess. I'll just give you some things that I took over this job as administrator in 2016 when Sheriff Shane Jones took over. I've been in law enforcement over 20 years. I've worked the street, worked the jail, and I was a criminal investigator for about 10 years. So took over in about 2015. And I was always wondering why our four sergeants were so busy in the back, because I was new to this job. The other administrator had done it for about 35 years. And, they were busy sitting down counting medication. You know, just counting medication, getting ready to pass out to about 200 inmates. As a criminal investigator in the county, I had to put one or two jailers, had to put felony charges on them because they're passing out meds, and you don't know the guy, and he decides to take a pain med for him. That's another thing that came into play. You hope your officers won't do that, but you put that in front of some people, and you never know. So when myself, Sheriff Jones, started looking into this, we sat down and met with several different companies, and the turnkey was one of the best we talked to, and the liability that's gone off of my office, really the stress, and the stress from the sheriff in all this medication being passed is gone. We can actually do police work. Your sheriff and your officers actually don't have to worry at night about these guys making the right medical decision. Like it's already been mentioned, some of these, we've got a guy now that's basically suing us because he had a prior back injury and he bent down to tie his, to put his shoe on and hurt his back again. So the question comes up, do you do an MRI? What do you do? Well, we don't have to worry about that because they handle that. Sheriff don't have to worry about that. He don't have to consult with the doctor. Well, what should we do? They know what's medically necessary while someone's incarcerated that you have to do to keep from having to get Mr. Owens to go to court with you. And in reference to Mr. Owens, myself and the sheriff had to go, we were sued for about $10 million, had an inmate several years ago that had passed away a week after he had been in jail. And we were sued for $10 million. Mr. Owens represented us. Just happened that 3 weeks prior we had hired turnkey, and we didn't pay out a dime. We followed all the procedures the right way. Like they say, they do take a huge amount of liability off of you. You obviously got to make sure your officers don't make medical decisions on their own. They just defer to the nurse, and the nurse handles it. So that's one of the biggest things. This past year, as you know, 2020 was a horrible year to run a detention center. I mean, just horrible. Having these nurses on staff, that if anybody came to the door with a fever or any symptom, they were up front, they checked them, and if we needed to isolate them, they were isolated. So it was a huge help during that time. And one of the huge advantages of having a third-party medical like turnkey is, and I'm not here representing them, but I'm trying to tell you from an officer's standpoint, I've got about 40 officers that work for me, and I can tell you when they talk about retention, I had sergeants that were ready. They were ready. Great guys were ready to leave because they were like, 200 people serving on meds. I shouldn't be doing this. So that is a huge liability that was taken off of them. But during this pandemic, the liability that's taken off is huge. And the transport, that's what I was trying to get at, the transport is, I couldn't tell you the amount that was saved. We haven't looked at it or figured it. We just know that our transport officers, we hardly ever have to take anybody to the hospital anymore. You know, originally, if you was to come into jail, if I was to go to jail, my chest would start hurting too, because I don't want to be there. And at the time, if you just had your officers there and you didn't have a nurse there, what'd you do? Did you decide, well, I don't think he's lying? Well, you can't do that. You got to either be able to contact somebody or your nurse there handles it. We have had, we've hardly ever had that happen anymore. Things like that, you know, diabetic problems, things of that nature. When they come in, they talked about the intake area earlier. It's not all on those officers to, the officers are trying to get all these people in, get them in. And yeah, they're going to try to be perfect and answer every, ask every question. But when you have a third company there, that company there to answer those questions for you, and you know the nurse is going to check on them, then you know you're covered. Helps the sheriff sleep a little better at night because you know that there's doctors and nurses watching over these individuals. So, other than that, do y'all have any questions on the detention side of it? I can answer anything. We've done it. We've been with them since 2016, and I wouldn't have it any other way. It will save the safety. Transporting a detention, an inmate, we've had several, luckily with these phones that we have now in detention centers, we've caught several that have intentionally got punched in the face because they knew they were going to get taken to the ER because that's all we could do, and their girlfriend would put dope and everything into those ceilings just like these here in the bathroom. Luckily, those were the ones we heard over the phone, so we got to bust them when we got there, so it worked out to our advantage. But it takes that part out of it. Yeah, you're going to have to send some, but then you know they don't know you're going. They don't know when they're going to go now. So I'll answer any questions you may have.
I have a few questions.
Okay.
What level of coverage are they providing?
Pope County has a nurse 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. I believe on Wednesday they do like half days. So
split shift
on Wednesday. And, you know, one other thing is when you talk about coverage, we used to have a medicine line item and a medical line item in 2015. And now we just have a medical line item. And we don't have to pay all these separate bills for all these medications. It's all in one deal.
What about physician coverage?
We do, isn't it once a week?
Once a week.
Yeah, once a week.
Do y'all have the mental health coverage as well?
No, but that's what we're looking into. And that's another thing. You know, we just had the Sheriff's Convention conference, and we meet with ADC, we meet with the jail standards and some mental health people, and I'm telling you, just like they talked, it's becoming a huge problem. Usually up in our booking area where suicidal subjects are, there's at least 8 of them up there, and that's a lot for us. And that's something we're looking into to present to our quorum court, is the mental side of it, because we... Just for example, we had one individual that was there that was very violent, attacked 2 officers, and those officers were injured. State hospital was completely full, couldn't get a bed. Sheriff called the head of the state hospital, and we called everybody we could, couldn't get a bed. But turnkey nurses were there because this gentleman's, not only his mental state was out of control, because of that, he was physically deteriorating also. So we knew, you know, they implemented the insurer or whatever needed to happen to keep him physically, as physically fit as we could if he would eat it. So,
how many inmates are covered by y'all's contract with turnkey?
Our population is 172, but we usually stay around 200. We're at 216 today.
And do you know how much y'all charge for turnkey?
How much are
we
charging?
Yeah, how much are they charging y'all?
It's about $22,000 a month.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Thank you.
All right, thank you, sir.
Captain, thank you very much, man. I appreciate you.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thanks for coming. You don't have a dog in this fight, but appreciate you being here.
Absolutely. Big support, you know, the Pope County. So thank you for coming down. You know, to us, it's just vital. We're the fourth or fifth largest
county and the state of Arkansas. We need to be moving this direction. This just happened to come up. This is just one of those things right now that we have to deal with. And we've got hundreds of other things we got to deal with, too, in the future. But this is the one that's at the top of the pile this week. So, man, I pray for y'all's consideration. And if y'all got any questions, myself or Aaron, Captain Stone, or Angie, we're here to answer whatever we can do for you.
Mr. Chairman, I had a question I'd like to ask the representative of the clinic, if you wouldn't mind. I think during your presentation you had mentioned that there would be two nurses 7 days a week, 12 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like there will be two warm bodies at the jail, or how will that work?
What do you mean warm?
Like, will they physically be at our jail
yes.
12 hours a day, 7 days
yep.
a week? Or?
So each facility, there's two detention facilities. Each facility will have one nurse there 12 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Okay. The proposed contract had mentioned physician or mid-level provider. What is a mid-level provider?
Mid-level provider could either be a physician extender or a nurse practitioner, somebody who has a license to prescribe and treat medically.
And what is a physician extender?
Like a PA.
Okay. And I think you mentioned that there's two doctors in Pulaski County.
Two providers, not
physicians.
Yeah.
So that would be, provider would be like an APN or doctor?
One provider is an APN, and then we have a doctor there.
Okay. How many counties does that doctor serve?
I would have to, our doctor in Pulaski County is our regional medical director, so he oversees multiple counties, but he's there physically on site, I think, 3 days a week.
Okay. Let me ask it this way. So how many counties do y'all have in Arkansas covered?
17.
Seven?
17.
17. How many physicians do y'all have employed in Arkansas?
I believe it's either three or four. I would have to get with HR to see. And then we probably have four or five physician extenders.
And I assume in the other states, do any of your physicians ever cross state lines? Or like,
yes, sir. Yep. And that's part of the regional advantage because we have our providers and our nurses, frankly, to work in multiple states. So if we have a nurse go on vacation here in Faulkner County, we have a float pool where we employ, I think, over 25 nurses that are not assigned to any facility at all. And they get their assignment a week at a time. So that helps cover vacation, et cetera.
The proposed contract mentioned that it would be up to 84 hours of LPN services, up to 40 hours. That does give me a little bit of concern because I interpret that as it's essentially, you know, we cover what's done, and once, you know, they're finished, they leave and go on to the next county. You know, essentially we have allocated to us up to 84 hours, not that we will
sure.
have 84 hours of a person here. Is it they will be here, or is it that they can?
That's standard contract language. That could be adapted.
And obviously, you know, we've heard everyone speak highly of your organization. Of course, it's kind of sprung to us because this all happened all of a sudden. Obviously, I'm very conscious about the cost because we're going to triple our medical budget. And as we heard the sheriff's office say,
yes, sir,
we're 11 jailers short because they can't pay them anything. And who wants to do that job for $13.07 an hour? I know I would. And so I just want to make sure that we understand what we're getting for our money. And I am a little concerned that we're getting at least, we have a doctor that comes to our jail, and now we're kind of losing that, and that kind of worries me. But of course, that's up to the court. I have a question, Mr. Owens, if he's still here. Are you aware of, this is just my ignorance because I don't do any of this kind of law, there's not any exceptions to federal diversity jurisdiction that because we're, I think y'all are based out of Oklahoma.
Yes.
We're an Oklahoma company. When an inmate invariably sues them and us and everybody under the sun, we're not going to get hauled down to federal court, are we?
Almost all the cases against the county are in federal court.
Under federal question?
Under federal question. Okay. So the two bases, what he's talking about is two bases for federal court jurisdiction, whether it's federal question, a violation of the federal constitution or statutes, or diversity jurisdiction where somebody from California sues somebody from Connecticut. Either of those situations can create federal court jurisdiction. But we're always there anyway because of the federal question.
Okay. Thank you. Another question for the for turnkey. When it says that a physician or mid-level provider will be available for essentially on call for emergencies, is that we have a detainee that's got problems, we need you here right now? Is that a telemedicine by the phone? Because I don't want to see in a situation where we're spending $800,000 a year and we're still sending them to the ER because the doctors in Pulaski County and nobody can be here to tell us, well, is this a diabetic issue or is this a serious issue? Or
we can do that. Your price is going to be about double. So, I mean, we realistically have to pay a competitive wage to our providers. I can tell you Pulaski County, even though the population between the two counties is only double, their contract's about four times the amount of what we've proposed to you guys. So the on-call is a 24-hour phone consultation, but it's not just a random, hey, I got a guy, do we need to send him out? We have a protocol that we utilize to collect data so that the provider has information to make a judgment call. Will some of those still go to the hospital? Yes, of course. But some of them will still go to the hospital even if he shows up.
I'm going to piggyback real quick. I think I asked you about a doctor being physically present. I was told one clinic a week.
Yes, sir.
So did you catch that? I thought you said that you didn't think any doctor was going to be physically present.
Well, I meant, would there be any doctor here in the county? Like, we have something going on, we can call a doctor to come out to the jail and look at somebody.
That's not available? There's not an on-call physician?
It's not on-call like, hey, doc, can you come to the jail right now?
Right.
No. It's a consultation for emergency.
For the LPNs and the registered nurses, right?
Or after hours.
Or after hours.
We don't have, our doctor doesn't come up to the jail as it is right now. Our LPNs are on call.
Right.
They get the phone calls from the jailers. They kind of tell them what's going on. Uh-huh. And if they need to send somebody out, the doctor, through a phone call, says go ahead and send them.
That's what I thought you said earlier, too. Yeah. So the one clinic a week that is happening now,
the doctor physically comes in.
That will still, okay.
That will still happen.
And how long do those clinics usually last? Do you know?
It depends on the amount of detainees. It can go from, he comes in at 8 o'clock at unit 1, and he can go till 12, 1 o'clock. But
right.
Sometimes it's done at 10 o'clock.
And is that the same with however many of the nurses decide? Is that where the decision-making process happens?
It's
or?
Whoever needs to be seen. But let me be clear.
But who decides that?
Well, let me say this. If somebody needs to be seen, we're taking the liability off of you guys and putting it on us.
Mm-hmm.
So there is zero motivation for us not to see someone who needs to be
okay.
seen.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions of me?
You're clear. Thank you. Sheriff, would you and Miss Woolley come up, please? Sheriff, one of the street rumors is that Dr. Stewart resigned because he asked for a 10% increase in salary and you only responded with a 1%.
First, I've heard of that. I had Dr. Stewart in my office Friday and sat down with him and was absolutely hate to see him go. And I can tell you why he's leaving, but that's not even close to the reason. Now, I will tell you, he asked for a raise at last year during budget time. And at that moment, we were unable to accommodate that with the court. And so we were hopefully putting it off until the next cycle. And, well, now I'm trying to get my dispatcher's raises so I quit losing them. And but that, it absolutely had nothing to do with it. I've asked Dr. Stewart directly. He has his reasons. He did share those reasons with me. And I will not share them with the public. If he wants anybody to know why he's leaving, then y'all can ask him directly. But absolutely had nothing to do. Left good terms. Great doctor.
Fair enough. Sheriff, why didn't you bid this contract out?
I'll go ahead and answer that. And at this point, there is an exception for bidding in an emergency health situation. So the sheriff and the county can bid it out, but I felt like it fell under that particular exception, at least for the remainder of the year. Come beginning of next year, it would be bid out.
I think we're under a time restraint as well, July the 8th. I don't think we could go through a bid process that quick.
Right. I think we just found out about Dr. Stewart, or our office found out about it recently. So as far as the rationale for not bidding fell on our office.
And if I may add, the Dr. Stewart did give us a formal termination of his agreement, and it said without cause, and it was dated June 8th.
Ms. Woolley, you have the proposed financing of 6 months. And in your jail budget, you have not reduced the medical assistant, nurse, and contract labor for the jail doctor. Why have you not netted out the cost?
As I spoke of earlier, I did not ask to reappropriate that amount of funding because, for one, it's not going to add up to the amount we need for the rest of the year. It will only be a fraction of the cost. I did look at it briefly, and I could possibly project, but I know I'm still going to have incoming bills. I have a prorated bill for the jail doctor contract labor that I'll have to pay. I have medication bills for May and June, and partly for July that I will have to pay. And then there will be still medical claims from that time frame as well, and possible medical claims even after the contract goes into effect, that there will still need to be money associated with that I can pay those out of if it doesn't fall within the contract's means. And like Mr. Owens and Mr. Juno both said, sometimes that occurs. It won't occur as likely with a third-party medical, but they are still possible. So at this time, I have not asked to reappropriate or even defund those areas because I don't know positively how to reassure the court that I know that there is no expense, how much expense is going to still be there. One of our LPNs, the jail doctor, like I said before, is paid out of county general, out of the county jail department. One of the LPNs is paid out of that, and then the other LPN is paid out of the criminal justice fund. And so defunding or reappropriating that funding will come out of multiple different areas of funding. And then also the medical assistant position, it is job title is classified as medical assistant, and we are asking that the court keep that job position as is. And Mr. Juno can attest to this, but they do not, their company does not assist with our medical billing paperwork between our facility and ADC. And there is multiple documents and paperwork and things like that that we have to handle between ADC and our facility, and that's something that we want to keep her on for to make sure that that's handled appropriately. So we would not be defunding or getting rid of her position.
Ms. Woolley, I was asking about the above the line labor expenses, salaries, not below the line, which the answer that you gave to Justice Pearson.
I think
we're not going to have the jail doctor after July the 1st. You're not going to have a nurse after July the 1st because turnkey is going to provide it.
Yes, sir. But if I can say this again, the jail doctor will have a prorated bill from July 1st to July 8th that I will have to pay. I I need to make sure how much that is, so I can anticipate approximately $20,000 possibly out of that contract labor line item that you are more than welcome to reappropriate if you would like to this contract. And the nurses that we have on staff, there is legal things that are outside of my professional background that I would revert to probably Mr. Murphy or even Mr. Juno. But our LPNs, if they decided to no longer be employed, we would have payouts of their benefit hours, and so there would be still money needing to be paid to these employees that I cannot tell you without, I mean, with all certainty, how much money I need to still be in those line items. So that's why I asked for the full amount to be appropriated as whole for 6 months, because I don't want to give any false information to this court. I'm not anticipating spending the money that's sitting there for any other purpose out of the areas in which they are right now. If we do not have a medical bill come in, I'm not going to pay anything else. The only things budgeted for in county general, county jail, is our contract labor for the doctor, the medicine for the inmates, the medical claim line item, and then there was common carrier also, which is our prisoner transport, and that line item has already been expended. So I'm not going to spend anything else out of that area. That's the only line items budgeted for in that budget. And so once I spend what I have to spend, that money will sit there and go back into county general, or I will come forward to the court and tell you, we have paid everything that I feasibly can see coming in, other than possible medical claims still coming in, that I need to keep maybe this amount of money in, and we will give you back the money. We've done that before in other funding resources that things like this has happened.
When will you know when the salaries will be finally determined and we can make a budget item change?
I would suspect if the contract takes place and takes over July 9th, then any kind of a payout or anything would be completely paid out in full by the end of July. So I can meet back with the court in August. And I think I would have a better understanding of our expenses as well for medicine and medical claims at that point, as long as our providers have billed us. We've had a recent problem, and Mr. Juno may be able to attest to this too. Our pharmacy provider that we use did an update to their billing system, and it messed up everything, and they are behind billing us. I just recently got our bills for January through April, and I just put them in today. So that's sizably backdated, because usually I get them at the very end, I mean within the first week of that month ending. And so they're behind, but I think they've got all that worked out. So hopefully I would be able to give you a full aspect of everything in August.
Thank you, Sheriff and Ms. Willie. That's all the questions I have.
Thank you, Chairman.
One question, if you know, and maybe Justice Brown does, because I heard him allude to this. Dollar for dollar, how much more is the turnkey solution compared to what we're spending currently on all of our medical care for the jail?
So currently in 2021, we have budgeted for complete medical cost, it comes to $256,201.56. If you look at a yearly contract cost, because right now we're just looking at 6 months prorated, if you look at an annual contract cost, it would be $770,000. Take off the $256,000 and change, so it would be a difference of $513,798.44. I did not, I did, in my copy that I emailed out, I did put beside each of the expenses that add up to our medical costs, what fund, department, and line item each of those medical costs are paid out of, because one of the nurses is paid out of criminal justice.
Ms. Willie, while you're there, on this little sheet you sent us today,
yes, sir.
Would you have... add another column here by tomorrow night and put what those
I can try to find out, and I know that.
Well, I think one thing to take into consideration is that the services are different. I'm not sure that the prices would be.
And also, I've heard y'all say this before, but the contract that is proposed would be up to the judge's discretion on his approval, wording and what it covers and things to that nature. We are asking the quorum court to appropriate the funding. So.
Ms. Woolley, would you, another request now, the same request, will you put in a column for the contract cost by the counties for the quorum court tomorrow?
I can, sir, but it might, I mean, as Polk County just stated, they do not get mental health services. Our contract provides mental health services. There's going to be different variables within all of that.
I ask you again for the third time, will you obtain the prices that the counties are paying turnkey for your listing on here?
Justice Speaker, we will absolutely make that happen, but we'll also indicate we may be comparing apples to oranges too. But we'll make that happen. Not a problem.
We'll compare averages, not apples and oranges.
Yeah.
That's all I have. All the questions.
Sheriff, I can jump in too. I don't know, Sheriff. Would it maybe be possible to? I'd be kind of curious to see, like what would it cost if we had a contract that's essentially identical to the coverage we have now, just so I get an idea of kind of what are we getting for our money? Because, you know, that is such a big increase. That's the scary thing.
Sure.
I'd just be curious if they're even willing to quote, like, two nurses 40 hours a week, and then Dr. Stewart was one day a week clinic. I'd just be kind of curious to see. It may come out to where if we had that same level of coverage, they actually come in less because they are a private company that's running things as a private company should. I think that might help the apples and oranges because right now all I know is that Polk County is $22,000 a month. They don't have mental health services, but that's a lot of money saved right there. We can go hire a psychiatrist or something. I'm just kind of curious on the apples and oranges piece. That would help me.
Do you want me to
address that?
So I'll try to answer these questions kind of in order. Number one, with the other counties, what they pay, we, as a courtesy to our clients, we don't disclose that, so they can ask their counterparts in law enforcement, which I'm sure they will get that to them, but we would extend the same thing to you guys as a client. If you become a client, we wouldn't share your contract with others without your permission. But as far as the apples to oranges, as they already mentioned, for instance, Polk County is one facility. We're staffing one facility for 180 inmates. Here we will be staffing two facilities we're projecting up to 500 inmates. So the medication costs, all that's going to be extremely variable from what you do from site to site. As far as offering a lower level of service with what we propose is the absolute bare minimum you guys need. Most people would not quote a facility of your size without 24/7 coverage. So with this number of inmates, we would not, in two facilities, we would not do a 5 day a week, 8 hours a day. It's just too much liability.
Well, if I can please jump in, I mean, everybody's got a price.
No, we don't.
If the money was right, y'all would do it.
We wouldn't.
Now,
we would not. It's a high liability.
Okay. This contract that you presented us is for 360 inmates. And you just told the court that now we're up to 540. These numbers aren't adding up.
Okay.
I'm not understanding where we're going with this. And, I mean, I have a duty to my constituents to make sure that every penny of county money is spent appropriately. And we've been thrown into this emergency of the doctor's resignation, which is not anyone's fault. It happens. We're getting a contract that we don't have time to bid out. It's a 5-month contract. So this is not even, y'all can decide y'all don't want to do it January 1st, and we're right back where we are. This notion about
we won't share what other counties charge us. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, and then Phil jumped in, but this is public money. This is all FOIA.
It is. And FOIA is to a county government, not to a private.
But when you take county money, you become subject to the Arkansas FOIA. That's why Colony Corporation is subject to FOIA in this town.
We can get those, but we would request that permission from our clients. And we can do it. I mean, I'm not trying to be difficult. We're here with the solution. As far as the population in the contract, I didn't know it's...
Yeah, on average, we hold 300 to 364, but we're capable of holding 400.
Right. And my point there is if this contract is designed to cover up to 540, well, that's a whole different can of worms. Now, listen, these numbers are making a lot more sense to me.
But if we're
capped at 360, and we're not guaranteed hours, but it's up to, I mean...
And as I said, we can adjust language.
I do not feel comfortable with this. I mean, I will vote to send this to the court, but I ain't voting for it tomorrow unless I get some more numbers that makes me comfortable with this. And Sheriff, I'm sorry to put you in a lurch, but this scares the hell out of me. What are we signing up for? You know? And right now, I haven't really been hearing anything that makes me comfortable. When I start asking questions, that I'm getting argued. You know? I mean, I don't know if I need to go and FOIA each one of these counties and find out what their contract says and what they're getting for their money. I don't know. I mean, $500,000 increase is what percentage of the jail budget? And we can't afford to pay our jailers a living wage? I mean, this is all very rushed. It's not been bid. There's some problems in the contract. And when I get answers like, how much other counties paying? Well, we're not going to tell you unless they tell us we can. Well, that's just not the law, you know? And... that means I got to take time out of my day tomorrow and start FOIAing counties to get this information. I will, but I think that it would go to alleviate a lot of my concerns if we could get something that shows if we had the same level of service we have now, this is what it would cost. If we spend this much more, this is the much more service we get. So that this court can make an informed decision about what we're buying. Because I think it's so clear. I don't want to buy a pig in a poke. And right now, I feel like this is a big poke. And that's all I have to say about it.
I think that we can get the other Class 6 counties information that you're asking for. I believe we can at least reach out to them. I know those sheriffs personally, and I think that they wouldn't be object to giving me that amount. Polk County is Class 5, relatively smaller county. So maybe we can do some comparison between the other Class 6s, which is what we are.
Now, Sheriff, not only the Class 6 counties, but you've got 3-7 counties here.
Yes, sir.
We will do our due diligence to get those figures for you and present them to the full court.
These are public information. You can't protect it. Ms. Willie can request it under a Freedom of Information Act, and we'll be done with it. But it'd be a whole lot easier if you'd get Ms. when you take her out for supper tonight, get the money.
I'm open to doing that. My response was as a courtesy to our clients. We coordinate when we're sending information out. I have no issues disclosing what our contracts are. I personally don't, but we're a client relation industry, client relation company, and we consistently communicate with our clients when we're sharing information.
Will you take care of it?
We will get the information.
And by tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, preferably that the numbers are provided by Ms. Woolley sometime before we meet at 6 o'clock.
Yes, sir.
I echo my colleague's sentiments. You know, they're your clients. I understand you're a private corporation, but they're public entities. So I definitely agree. And we're talking about something that, you know, we did, like Justice Brown said, we did not bid out. This is our only way to really assess the competitive nature of this.
Sure.
I see right now we have two LPNs working 40 hours a week, one doc on call, and with your service, you know, two LPNs working more hours, plus an RN and electronic health records, how does that equate to $500,000 a year?
I mean, we have a pricing model. I'd
love to hear it.
I don't. Here's what I will say. We partner with 17 counties in Arkansas and almost 70 in our region. We've replaced our competitors at more than half of our contracts. We never had a single contract replace us, and that speaks to the level of service you get. You guys can either pay, you're going to pay for medical regardless. You can either pay in the front end and take care of lives and provide a good service to your community, or you can pay on the back end in lawsuits and people's names get drugged through the papers with lawsuits and a bunch of media coverage, and unfortunately, people's health would be impacted. When I say we wouldn't do a five-day model for Faulkner County, I say that genuinely because we're proud of the product we provide. We know what works in our industry. Am I saying that you won't find somebody to lowball a price to you to come in 2 days a week? You could probably find somebody to do that. But we're a company, and I think Mr. Sweet attests to it. You can call any of our clients. We offer all of our clients our contact information. What we offered you is a program we are comfortable with Faulkner County. If you only had one facility that we had to staff, the price, of course, would be significantly less. So we have to take that into consideration.
Because you said it's two LPM per facility, right? So one is there at all times. One is there, right?
You're going to have an LPN every day, 12 hours, at right. each facility. Plus mental health, plus psychiatry, plus medication.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Now, the business at hand is which one of these proposed ordinance 21-19 do we recommend to the full court for tomorrow night? We have three. All three are the same amount. One is the funding. It comes out of the Capital Improvement Fund. The second one comes out of the CARES Act. Yes, and then the third one comes out of the criminal justice sales tax. Given the discussion about the animal control that we have, to move it forward, then I suggest that somebody make a motion that we advance to the court that it comes out of the criminal justice fund of number 3407.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion?
I have them on my phone. I don't have them in front of me. Let me read.
Basically, three options.
Mm-hmm. There are three options here, are they? Just one. The only difference is the funding source.
Justice Pickett, I'd like to raise my hand for a question or comment whenever you have an opportunity.
Your opportunity is now.
I'll take it. Thank you very much. I was wondering, you mentioned the Coronavirus Relief Fund is one of the funding opportunities presented to the court, to this committee tonight. Sheriff or Ms. Woolley or even Ms. Stone, could you tell us how many COVID cases are in the jail right now, like at this point right now, approximately?
As of today, we've only had one, but about a month ago, we had all of our male housing, which was about 70, had tested positive.
Okay. And
I don't know what happened to him.
Justice Levy-Hoskey, are you done?
Oh, that's him. Oh, never mind.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm muted somehow. Our jails have seen the front line of COVID, no doubt. The jails all across the nation, and the doctors are on the front line of that in the jails. And so I would love to see the committee pass something to fund this out of COVID. If we're going to spend COVID money on anything, geez Louise, let's have it be the jail doc. I know this is a recurring expense, and it's not something that can be funded out of COVID every single year, but if we can take a stab at it 1 year until we can figure out where else the money's going to come from, that'd be great. Thank you, Mr. Pickett, for recognizing me.
We have a motion before us.
Repeat the motion, please.
That we're going to fund the proposed expenditure out of the criminal justice sales tax account number 3407.
May I add a comment, sir?
You want to speak?
I think that's what I just asked. Yes, sir.
Let me put myself back together. Now, go ahead.
Yes, I did approach the court with three different funding options to make it apparent that we know that this is the correct decision we need to make for not only our department, but for this county to move us forward and to make sure that our inmates are protected and taken care of in the best manner possible. We know that there is currently, and Mr. Sampson can attest to this, I know I don't have a copy, I'm not sure if this is your current copy you spoke of tonight, but the summary of statements that I have was dated May 31st. Is that the one you read from tonight?
Something about that.
I don't know. It says May 31st.
Yeah, it's May 31st. That's what you're looking at. I don't know what you're looking at.
Okay.
Right there.
It says amount not appropriated for criminal justice sales tax currently is $414,584.39.
That's the number I have.
To appropriate the full 6 months out of criminal justice, we would leave, I would have to do the math, it would be approximately around $29,000 not appropriated in criminal justice. And we do understand that the funding is there at this time, and that's based on the current projections that were revised by Mr. Sampson in March of this year and given to the court. When I did the budget for 2021, we budgeted with an expectation of having $65,000 non-appropriated for criminal justice. So we are blessed that sales tax keeps increasing, and hopefully it keeps on that course. And we can take on whatever expenses come our way. At this time, if you, as a court, appropriate the funding out of criminal justice, then, like I said, it would leave us approximately $29,000 non-appropriated. As Justice Lahosky and myself stated before, our department submitted documents and information to obtain the CARES Act money, and it although does not have to be extended the same way that we submitted those documents, this is something I can tangibly relate to, going back to medical expenses and to provide a better service and medical care for our detention facility and our inmates, and related to COVID-19. And also, in addition, the American Rescue Plan, I know we have not received that funding yet, but it is my understanding that the jail contract would fall within the means of acceptable coverage that could be extended out of that. So if you as a court decided to pay for the 6 months of this contract out of the CARES Act, and it doesn't change, and the expense for the contract could still be within the means of the American Rescue Plan, I would approach the court to pay for 2022, 2023, and 2024, because in my understanding, the American Rescue Plan expenses in December 31st of 2024. We would ask for the medical contract to be paid for out of that. The American Rescue Plan Act and fund is approximately $24.5 million, and this would account for approximately altogether 3.5 years of the contract would be approximately, I think, right under $2.7 million. So it's a fraction of the amount of money that's actually going to come into this county from the federal government in support of our response to COVID-19. That's what the federal government designed this money for. I understand some of it is not tangibly, you know, has to be spent back on that, the CARES Act. But I know the work I did. I know the work that other county departments did. And to me, that's the right thing to do. I'm just speaking personally. That's what I would want to see just as a citizen of this county, it be used for medical response for our inmates. So that's the reason I gave you that as an option, because the money's there and it has not been appropriated to anything else. And we're talking about the care of human beings in our custody. And you're talking about funding that right now as an option for a building and operations that is not even existing right now. So I feel like that's completely within reason and means to ask for the medical care of our inmates as well.
Justice Pickett, if I can respond.
Sure.
So, Ms. Willie, I don't disagree with you that the American Recovery Plan money most likely can be spent on this based on the guidance that we currently have right now. So I'm comfortable with the motion on the floor, knowing that we can backfill that fund with that money at that time. I would not support pulling this money from the capital improvement fund. I'm pretty protective of that, as we've already discussed tonight. And probably because we're not touching the CARES money is because it's not encumbered, unencumbered, because that leaves us some flexible money for other areas that we've talked about. But the American Recovery Plan absolutely would be a good, appropriate use of this to backfill this fund. So just from my point of view, I'm okay with moving forward with the motion on the floor. And that gets us where we want to be.
Comments? All in favor of the motion on the floor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Thank you. Is there anything else before to come before the committee tonight? Then we're adjourned.